Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
You just found the most downloaded fitness, health, and entertainment podcast. This is Mind Pump. In today's episode, we answered listeners' questions after a 62-minute intro portion. In the intro, we talk about current events, family life, studies, and much more. By the way, you can check the show notes for timestamps if you want to skip around to your favorite parts. Also, if you want to ask us a question that we might pick from, go to Instagram at Mind Pump Media. That's the place you do it. Now, this episode is brought to you by some sponsors. The first one is Legion. Today we talked about one of their sleep supplements called Lunar, and it's gone. Like, we used it up. We've asked for more. It's super, super, super effective. Try it out for yourself. You wake up refreshed too. You don't wake up groggy. Great product. So go check them out. Go to buylegion.com/mindpump. That's buylegion.com/mindpump and get 20% off your first order. This episode is also brought to you by Organifi. In today's episode, we talked about their Shilajit gummies, backed by many, many studies. It's a compound that's been used in Ayurvedic medicine for a long time. Go check them out. They have many other products and supplements as well. Go to Organifi.com. That's Organifi.com/mindpump. Use the code mindpump. Get 20% off. This month's workout program sale is as follows. MAPS Anabolic, 50% off. And MAPS Anabolic Advanced, also 50% off. If you're interested, go to MAPSFitnessProducts.com and then use the code MARCH50 for that discount. All right, back to the show. If you want to be consistent with exercise for the rest of your life, it's important to fully understand and appreciate all of the benefits exercise brings you. Okay, to be more specific, when you first get started, one of the things you might want to do is not watch your progress in the mirror or the scale. We're all aware of how exercise affects the way that we look or weigh, and sometimes that gets in the way of all the other incredible benefits that exercise provides. When you get that full picture, you can then create a relationship with exercise that lasts the rest of your life.
Do you think you can get there before tackling like whatever the said goal was that got you to the gym?
Oh, I mean, can you? Yeah, likely, probably not.
Yeah, I don't. You know, I've thought about this a lot. Like, part of, I think, what helped this process for me was actually reaching the physical goals, right? Like, and seeing how I felt, seeing that, feeling that moment. And it's like, okay, it came and went. It's like, now what?
Yeah.
Had I not reached that, I wonder if I would still be chasing that and still feel like, but I've never felt this way, or I've never got it. And, you know, it's like, it's kind of like the same thing too with it. We've talked about this, comparing your like financial journey. Like, when you come from nothing and you have this goal financially of like, oh, if I just made, you know, $1 million or whatever,
I'd be so happy.
I'd be so happy. Right. And I don't think any wise, even wise older version of me coming back in time and telling me like, that's not going to, like, I don't think I listen. I think I have to go do it to feel it and recognize it myself. So do you think it's possible for somebody who's entering their journey of fitness, who's, you know, insecure about being 40 pounds overweight and feels that they just got to get this weight off desperately or whatever, can you get them to shift their focus on what you're alluding to right now?
Well, that's what I'm going to try and do, you know, with this conversation, is hopefully get people kind of, you know, consider it. Because, okay, so let's take a step back. If you're getting started or you've been on this journey, the ideal situation is you never stop, right? So I think if you were to ask the average person who gets started with exercise and fitness, and you say, okay, ideally speaking, in a perfect world, would you keep doing this forever or would you stop? And they'd say, well, I'd like to be able to do this forever. Okay, so if this is going to be something you're going to do for the rest of your life, which could be 30, 40, 50, 60 years or more, then essentially what you're doing is you have to develop a relationship with this activity where you're going to want to continue doing it for that long. And your best bet at doing that is to get a full understanding of what this will provide you. You know, I think about the data on body acceptance and body satisfaction. When you look at the data on the average age that people can say that they feel most satisfied or they accept their body is in their 50s and 60s, right? 50s and 60s, like objectively speaking, just in terms of aesthetics, right? Like you don't look your best when you're in your 50s or 60s.
Nobody people would does.
Think, yeah, people would think your 20s, right? Or, you know, that would be when you look your best or whatever. And yet the data shows that this is the highest odds of body acceptance is right around there. So what does that tell you? It has less to do with how you look. There's a lot more that goes into this. So, you know, I could say right now with full confidence, and I think nobody would disagree, right? Exercise gives you more, if you do it right, it gives you more energy, improves your mobility, improves your mood. The data shows it's very incredibly powerful antidepressant, anti-anxiety activity, balances out your hormones. And then through that, right, the filter through which you receive the world is more positive. So things don't seem as bad. Things seem more positive. You feel more resilient. But the problem is that we hyper-focus on two aspects of the effects of exercise, which is like my weight and how I look, therefore ignoring all the others. And in the pursuit of those two, weight and appearance, we end up sacrificing all those other things. We end up moving in the wrong direction. And then we end up developing a relationship with exercise where we hate it. It doesn't work. I don't like this. It doesn't feel good. I'm not getting what I thought I would get. And so it's no wonder people stop. Now, if they took the scale, and I used to do this with clients, and when I can get them to agree to it, it was very powerful. It's like, take your scale, throw it away or hide it. Don't look in the mirror, or at least don't study yourself in the mirror. Let's do this for 60 days. Can you do this for 60 days? And at the end of 60 days, they were always shocked at the results they had gotten because they weren't focused so heavily on it. And what happens, because they're not weighing themselves, looking in the mirror, you have no other, it would be like if I put a blindfold on you, how much more aware you would be of your hearing and of touch and of smells, because you're not able to focus on sight. So by not focusing on those, you're allowing yourself to be more aware of all the other potential benefits. Then when you develop that relationship with it, well, now it's this thing that you're going to always want to do because it improves everything.
Yeah, I was thinking about your question, Adam, because I think, you know, thinking back, I've had clients that are a lot more mature than most, and then some that aren't, you know, and it's usually like the younger clients that come in will have this kind of idea of what they want to do, and they're just going to do it regardless, and they're going to make mistakes, and, you know, it's just kind of part of the journey is they're going to make mistakes, and they're going to pursue things that, you know, might not be the most ideal. But then again, if you can propose something like, I just think that message probably isn't put out there enough for them to see as an option. Like, let's really draw this out and look at it for what it is to see, well, maybe this is actually going to last the longest. My body is going to get to that place I want it to, but it's just going to be a real gradual progression. And I'm going to be working with my body, and I'm not going to be like really, you know, pushing it to this extreme that I had in my own ideas coming into this.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good point. Like maybe my perception of it is because it's so attached to 20-year-old me.
Yeah.
And maybe if 40-year-old me was just now trying to get into shape for the first time in his life,
and he found a good trainer.
Right. And maybe just the maturity of, and maybe because I can draw that to like money and other things, like, oh, so it's kind of like that journey. Like I get it. Like, so
I've learned this with other things.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so maybe 40-year-old me would be able to do that. 20-year-old me, no way. Right. Yeah. But so maybe you're right. It's not, it's less to do with like that you have to go through that journey per se, and more so that there is a emotional self-awareness maturity that you probably need to be at in order to see that.
You know what the irony of this is when you do what we're saying, you'll end up looking better than had you not.
Totally.
So this is actually the path towards what you think you want. And then speaking on appearance, you know, I was having this conversation earlier on a podcast, and you know, it really became very clear to me. I'll use another example, kind of illustrate where I'm going to go. But if you if you consume fitness information, media, social media and fitness information, you would get the distorted, you would get a very distorted idea of how effective supplements are, because the fitness industry is an industry and it's a market like all markets. So it's there to generate revenue. Supplements are a revenue generator. So a lot of the information that's put out there is to generate revenue from supplements. So a lot of information that's out there talks about supplements. You would get the idea, and a lot of people do, and I did all as a kid, you read everything and you think supplements make much more of an impact than they actually do, because the information that's put out is constantly talking about supplements. Well, media also puts out and lies to you through this, that it says looking, having a six pack or looking super attractive or flawless is way more important to your happiness than it actually is. You think it's one of the most amazing things. Like, oh my God, if I just look like that person, I would be so happy. They have very good, clear data on this. And it's actually, Arthur Brooks told me this, I think on our podcast. He said, if you were on a scale of 1 to 10, you were a 5 in terms of attractiveness, and you spent money and time and effort and years moving from a 5 to a 9, your happiness would barely move up a little bit. Of all the things that will affect your happiness, he's like, that will barely. Now, having good health, much bigger impact. Having better mental health, much bigger impact. Relationships with the people around you, having meaningful work, not being in pain, those kinds of things, which exercise also provides.
Yeah.
But what we're doing is we're putting all the value on our appearance because we think the appearance is what's going to give us all these things. And it's totally distorted.
Yes.
It's a big lie.
You also risk that you get there and you recognize that you're not any happier. And then you have the attitude of like, oh, why even do this?
Yeah.
And then you throw it out the window completely. Like you're so obsessed with reaching this, you know, goal, this vanity goal, and you get there, you realize you're not any happier than what you were before, and you put all that work, sacrifice it, and then you go like, oh, this is not even for me. And then you write it off completely. So I think it's so important that we teach our clients to attach it to all these other things, because you risk one, like you originally said, being so obsessed that it drives you into unhealthy things to mm-hmm. reach it, or you actually reach it. And then you realize, oh, how unfulfilled you are, or, oh, it didn't make you any happier. And then you have the attitude of, F it, why even do that?
You know, it's funny. I bet you, I don't know, there's no studies that I could pull from, but I would bet money that if you took the mental health of extreme physique owners, like super ripped, super buffed, whatever, like fanatic, crazy, orthorexic, whatever, like super obsessed fitness people, if you were to sample their mental health, it would probably be very similar to unhealthy obese individuals. I bet you would find it would be very similar in terms of their mental health. But I mean, we know this. How many people do we know in our space that, you know, they post pictures and they look like whatever, and you meet them and you know them, you're like, oh man, they are struggling.
I mean, this is because they traded one addiction for another.
Yeah.
You have this, the both mentally unhealthy, same mentally unhealthy person, just one of them abused food.
In one way.
And then in one way. And then the other, then they went the other direction and abused it by restricting from it and over obsessing about movement and exercise.
Yeah.
I mean, I always think it's interesting too, because it's like, you always like to pull back and draw back to like evolution. And it's like, I don't think we evolved to work out in a gym 7 days a week. I don't think that was like I think that's something that we've adopted because technology and things have evolved that we've actually lost movement. Like we don't work anymore. We don't do laborious jobs anymore. But where's the balance of that? Like, where is there like, yeah, we recognize the importance of our bodies moving and picking up heavy things and doing hard stuff. But then there's the other side of it. It's like when it becomes your life focus and you're obsessed with it. And it's like, so where is that?
Does it improve the quality of your life or take away from it? So what are the important things in life?
That's a hard one though, Sal, because the people that
they don't know.
Yeah. Because a lot of people, and I know you've met people like this that, you know, physically are, you know, look amazing and they're in the gym 7 days a week would tell you that their life is much better. Because aspects of it probably is, right? Yeah. There's parts that they probably get complimented and feel confident, they're strong, they look better than they ever have. And they're probably sleeping better than they were before when they were, you know, fat and lazy. Like, so there's enough things that they can draw to where they would make the connection and saying that their life is.
Well, does it improve your relationships or does it take away from your relationships? Does it improve your mood or take away from your mood? Does it improve your ability to be productive, take away? Does it make you a better husband or a worse husband, a better father or a worse father?
Yeah. Are you like, well-rounded? Yeah. You know, there's a lot of things. Are you easy to hang out with?
Yeah. Like, you know,
I don't know. It's sometimes people can get in this like hyper obsessed, which is fine. Like we all have hobbies and we all have like interests and things that we really pour ourselves into. You just have to kind of check yourself on some level. Your entire world.
I mean, I guess I operate from that same place of my goal is to do as little as possible to elicit the most amount of change. And so my philosophy as I've gotten older is I don't want to work out hardly at all. As little as I can to obtain being strong, being fit and mobile, being capable.
So you could do all the other stuff.
So yeah. I could do all the other things.
Yeah,
I know.
And that's it. Like, I just like, what's the least amount? I got to go to this building and pick up these weird shaped weights. So I could go do all the other things. So I could get down and play with my son and not get tired. So I could carry things for my wife when we need to go somewhere. So I could protect my family if we were to be attacked. So I could go do sports and activities that I love to do. So whatever the amount of time I got to spend in that gym.
That's great.
I want to spend as little as possible.
Filling your cup up so that way you can, you know,
to do all that other shit. Somebody else. Yeah. Any more than that is what? To feed my ego?
Yep.
Yeah.
Just so I can say I'm stronger than that guy, some other guy that's obsessed. Like, it's like, other than that, it's like, so to me, it's like, I'm always measuring that and going, okay, like,
totally.
What more can I apply so I get more out of these other things? When it becomes the cornerstone of your life, I think you're out of balance.
There's an evaluation that needs to happen. What's interesting too is, you know, we there's definitely signals that are being sent when you look at someone who's fit and healthy. And then what we've done is we've idolized that. But that's always, for all of human history, that was never the goal. That was a sign that there was something behind that that meant something valuable. In other words, if you are a woman for 99.9999% of human history, and you saw a man with broad shoulders, look strong, good posture, look like he was mobile, that told you, well, he could probably do things. He's probably healthy. He's probably, viral. When you look at a woman who's fit and healthy, it's like, oh, she could reproduce. She's healthy. She's not sick. She can move well. What's happened is we've taken the sign and made that the goal. Like, no, that's everything. It's all about what you look like, not what it potentially could represent. By the way, I'm speaking from a place of struggle myself. This is my continual. I mean, I've been working out for over 30 years. And this is something that I constantly have to like examine and check myself on, because I go there often where that then becomes the goal is to just spend time in the gym or do more exercise or whatever. And so this is, you know, I'm coming from a place of like, look, this is, I know what this is like, but it's a continual conversation.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if you ever, even from my angle, right. Which is kind of the opposite side. Like, I'm still always on that too. Cause easily I can get to the justification of like, I don't need to do anything. You know what I'm saying? So it's a constant conversation. It's this like, oh, I have it all figured out. It's that I'm always evaluating it. Cause there's always something I go and do. Shit. Doug and I just recently went skiing, and like the note to self was, I could use a little more cardio endurance.
Oh, because it was affecting your
ability. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, just carrying my snowboard from the truck up the hills to get up there, I'm like, whew, okay, I was a little more winded than I should be. That's like that check.
Nice check.
Yeah, it's like this check-in of like, hey, and again, why? Not so I could run an Ironman or say that I'm faster than one of you. It's because I love that. That's something that gives me so much joy in my life, and I don't want to lose the ability to do that. Or say like, oh, I don't want to go snowboarding because that sounds like so much work and I can't do it. Like, that's, I don't ever want to say it for that reason. So that is what will drive what I do in the gym in the next couple of months.
I can't help but think it's like, we're never ever in a period where you're in perfect balance. you're always chasing and pursuing balance.
Sure. Yeah.
And so it's like, and if you stop thinking about that, you're going to be even further away from balance.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah, like, yeah. So, you know, to, for me to try and keep and maintain my strength, like I have to always have a conversation with myself. Like what, you know, area should I kind of focus on now? You know, or if I've been sort of neglecting certain relationships or certain aspects of business or whatever it is, like you're just kind of like constantly evaluating where the need is.
And it's going to be constantly changing depending on the seasons of your life.
Yeah.
There's going to be times, like I remember when bringing Max into this world, like it was just that's right before that was when I went on this like obsessed journey of being able to sit down and squat. Like, and so it was like a massive goal to be able to just like get down in a comfortable position. Like, can I get to a place where I can be comfortable in the squatted position and play with my son on the floor to where I don't have to like lay down on my side or I'm all kneeling half like dad kneeling. You know what I'm saying? That you like, I don't want to do that. Like, I want to be able to hop down there and play with him and be agile. Like that will change. Right. So it just depends on the season of your life and evaluate. And that's really what all of
yes, this. Because if you're going to do this for the rest of your life, like how else are you going to develop that relationship? Is it really going to be how you look when you're 60, 70? I mean, it's not. And when you meet people and working out for a long time, it isn't anymore. They figure that out. By the way, speaking of, I mean, with little kids, like when you're a dad and you have little kids, you do realize the value of exercise and fitness because little kids, they're little nuclear reactors. Yep. They don't run out of energy. They want to play on the ground. And one of the worst feelings ever happened to you where you're like, your kid wants to play with you and you feel tired. Yeah. Like, oh God, you know? And you're like, oh, I don't want to drudge through this. I want my kid to be excited to play with him. I want to be excited to play with him. You know?
I mean, seriously, that's a big part of my fit. And so again, when you design your workouts or when you go into a workout, it's like, right now I'm not hitting my PR anywhere near my PR squats or deadlift. I could still pull 400 pounds off the ground and comfortably squat 300, no problem, but I'm nowhere near my PRs or that stuff. But where is me adding 50 more pounds to the bar on either one of those lifts support my ability to play with him, you know, or help my wife pick something up and carry it? Like, nowhere. So then if the extra energy that I would put to putting 50 more pounds on that bar would be better served doing mobility drills or doing things like that, because that's going to serve me at the current season
of
my life.
Or maybe work on another aspect of your health, like spiritual health reading or learning.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So it's like constantly having these check-ins and looking at your health as this pie chart of all these different things: spiritual health, relationship health, mobility, strength, endurance. Like, it all is in this sphere at different points of your life. More of them are going to be different priorities, and always checking in and going like, okay, where am I at? And then where should my gym be focused around?
Speaking of spiritual health, I told Adam the story this morning, but I'll tell you, Justin, it's like the craziest things have been happening recently to me. So I'm on this really like deep spiritual journey. I've been reading scripture and I've been feeling pulled just to you know, become different, become better in certain ways or whatever. So I'm driving to work this morning. I'm in my car, right? And so when you get off the freeway over here, sometimes there's like a homeless person standing next to the exit. And I guess that's a good place for them to get money, right? To hold a sign or something like that.
Uh-huh.
So there's a dude there standing there, and I've just been, you know, I've been like really on this journey. And this homeless guy standing there with a sign. So I'm like, oh man, I feel pulled to like maybe give him some money or something, right? So I kind of have like a little like, oh, you know, like inner check, because there's always that like, what if I give him money? What's he going to do with it? Is it really going to help him type of deal? But I'm like, you know what? You know, I don't know. I think I should, you know, do this. And so I say like a prayer, like, you know, basically help me make the right decision. I open my wallet and I have four $100 bills. I'm like, you ain't getting $100. I'm not going to give you.
Oh man.
Yeah. Sorry, bro. Like, you don't get $100 today, you know?
Expensive. Yeah.
But I said that kind of prayer in my head or whatever. Now, meanwhile, it's just true. Swear to God, Justin, I'm listening to the book of Matthew in my car. It's playing in my car, right?
Uh-huh.
So I look at my wallet. I see the hundreds. I already like, nah, you're not getting $100, buddy. Sorry. Say a little prayer. And then right when I do that, the story in Matthew of the rich man going to Jesus and saying, how do I get into the kingdom of heaven? He goes, he's a rich guy. Yeah. He says, sell all your belongings,
all your possessions,
give them to the poor, come follow me. So I hear that, right? And I'm sitting there and I'm like, oh, come on, man. No. Light turns green and I kind of drive off and I feel like so conflicted. I'm like, oh man, what do I do? I got to get here for a podcast or whatever. But I mean, seriously, how crazy is that that I got that?
You're almost better off not asking.
I know, dude. I was like, ah.
It's always tough lessons.
Hey, you know, I found time. I found time, though.
Did afterwards. You find him?
I did.
Oh, wow.
I drove all the way back because it was like weighing on me. So I did a podcast interview. It was weighing on me. And I'm like, you know what? That's how obvious.
Now, did you just give it and walk away, or did you ask him to do something?
I asked him to pray for me.
You did,
yeah.
You
so did. And he said some really nice things to me. This guy, some really nice things about my family and whatever. So it was really nice. But you got a nice crisp $100 bill. So there you go, dude. Don't thank me. Thank God, because he talked to me at that moment.
Oh God,
it's so funny. I know, it was so funny. It's like one of those moments where you just shake your head. You're like, all right, dude.
It could be a 20 in here somewhere. Yeah.
I'm like, what are the odds, right?
Yeah.
Anyway,
that's funny stuff. Dude.
I gotta tell you guys of a review of one of our listeners who's been using a GLP-1 agonist called tirzepatide. So tirzepatide, semaglutide, you know, the brand names Wegovy, Ozempic. These are like making the news as these like peptides that are, up until now, nothing's been shown to be more effective at weight loss. And it doesn't have the side effects of previous weight loss drugs. It's not a stimulant or whatever.
Right.
People are using them and it's just working. So this guy, he heard us talking about it and he wrote kind of a review of what's happening with him. And it's not just the weight loss part that blows me away. And I keep reading stuff like this, which is wild. So he started on tirzepatide. He's on 1/10 the normal starting dose, which, by the way, when they start you out, they typically start you out at a very, very small dose just to see what's an effective dose.
Yeah.
And I also didn't know this. I think it's like a once a week injection. I don't think it's an everyday injection. I think it's once a week.
Interesting.
Okay, yeah. So, yeah. Because for people who are afraid of everyday sub-Q injection, I think it's once a week.
That's okay. That makes sense to me because I know if you were to do growth hormone, you do growth hormone.
I don't think it's a short acting peptide. I think it's maybe long lasting. Maybe Doug, you can confirm this. But how often do you have to inject tirzepatide, or how often do you have to inject semaglutide?
And that's the specific one our MP Hormones partners have.
They have tirzepatide. Right? Yeah. They work with semaglutide.
So that's the one I ordered, by the way.
That's the one you're going to do.
Weekly.
Yeah.
Huh? So it's once a week.
Once a week. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know that. What was it last? Was it last week when we talked about this?
Yeah.
I should mine should be.
So check this out. This is what this person's saying. So they started on it and he goes, no negative side effects, 100% taking away the food fixation. So this is the words he used that I've always struggled with. I can't remember a time when I wasn't already thinking about my next meal, even though I just finished eating. Now here's the crazy part. I'm still hungry. No nausea, no headaches, but also not fixated on food. So it's not like it kills your appetite. He's just not obsessing about food. And then here's the other part. And this is what I keep hearing.
Attacks the cravings a bit. Huh?
Here's the part that's weird. I've also noticed that I have zero desire to engage in some other negative behaviors. Binging, procrastination, and a few others. Because the hedonistic aspect around them isn't there anymore. That's the weird. Yeah. That's the weird thing.
Well, for the audience, I've ordered it.
And no one's more honest than Adam.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what it's like.
Exactly what's going on.
I think it's
going
to be really interesting. I've definitely paid attention to, I've talked about it.
You're the perfect person.
I've talked about my relationship with sugar, with Diet Cokes, with all these different things that I'm very, very aware of my pull and draw to it. So it'll be really interesting. And so I tell you one of the things why I didn't do it right away. When we first talked about it, I was like, you know, though, like the last thing I want is it for it to reduce my appetite so much that I have an even harder time hitting my protein intake.
Yeah,
I'd be worried about that too.
Because that's my biggest struggle. Because
eating that much protein, what do you have to hit? 220?
Yeah, 220 plus, dude. I'm 230. You know what I'm saying? So in order to maintain that, like my body type from all these years of training to build muscle, unfortunately, if I eat bad, you know, quote unquote bad, where I'm not paying attention to my food, eating out, doing stuff like that, I'll lose. Like I lose muscle. Now my weight will stay about the same, but I just drop muscle and build and gain body fat. It's like the worst. So it's like
the worst of
it is. It's like if I just got a little fatter, I'd be like, yeah, whatever. You know what I'm saying? But I lose my muscle at the same rate. It's like it's awful. So that's my biggest fear is that so it curbs all these cravings and appetites, but then I'm still struggling to eat. So that's really interesting that the feedback was. he's still hungry, but not doing.
So I'm most interested in hearing what you have to say. So the person that I know that's close to me that's taking semaglutide hasn't noticed any of these other effects, but does say that they're not fixated on food. They still enjoy it. They just don't want to eat as much, but they haven't noticed anything else. But I have read other people saying they're reducing other like bad habits. And then I've been reading about some people having antidepressant and anti-anxiety effects from it. In fact, there's some studies where they're looking at the potential, and it makes sense, right? If it is acting on the parts of the brain that are seeking like distraction or hedonistic pleasure, that maybe it is an antidepressant in some cases. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. I don't know. But I'm interested to hear if you have any behavioral changes.
Yeah, I just text Katrina right now, and it's like it's already on its way. So I should be getting it in the next couple weeks. And does anyone talk to you about how soon? So should I expect it to happen relatively quick? Also, I'm assuming I should probably come off of my growth hormone at the same time. I shouldn't be running. I don't need to be running.
I don't think it matters.
Oh, you don't think it matters?
No, I don't.
So I can do both.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. I would double check that, but I'm pretty sure that doesn't
matter. Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. I know, right? Along the lines of eating, you know, I had a great conversation about, you know, helping to teach kids how to develop a good relationship kind of with food. And I was explaining it to this individual. And I realized I never really explained it really well on the podcast because he was kind of asking me some questions. And it's a very different approach from the one that I had with my older kids. So I have, you know, for people who don't know, I have two older kids from a first marriage and then two younger kids from my wife now. And the age gap is pretty big. My daughter, 14, and then I have a son that's 3. So there's 11-year difference. And the way that I am with food now is very different than I was with my older kids. The way I was with my older kids was very educational. Protein does this, carbs does this. You can only eat that if you finish this first type of deal. I thought that was like the best approach. But what I found, and you see this a lot with people in our space. Oh, this is what prompted it. The episode with Jason Kalipa, which by the way, we're getting crazy messages on. Crazy amounts of messages.
He was extremely vulnerable.
People are like, thank you for putting this up. I was in tears. I struggled. My daughter, my son, you know, whatever, like really big. So that's what prompted this conversation. A lot of people in the fitness and health space, we end up causing these problems with our kids because we fixate on the health effects and do this and do that and do this and that. And the reason why that causes an issue is because the skills that you need in today's world with food, especially for little kids, is you want them to learn to have a kind of relationship with food where they can listen to their internal cues, where they don't eat to please other people or not eat in order to avoid shame or ridicule. Like, you want them to develop a relationship with food that's kind of like comfortable, balanced, where they don't feel like they have to use food to numb themselves, distract themselves, or restrict food in that case. Mm-hmm. And so it's very different. So what we do now is when we eat dinner, we will put 4 or 5 options on a plate for my kid. And I pick one or two that I know that he'll like for sure. Like, I know he likes, you know, raspberries, and I know that he likes rice, for example.
Yeah.
So that'll be on there. Then I'll put stuff that I think he'll eat, but that he should eat, that he needs to eat. So like some lamb or some meat. And then I'll put a couple things that I know he doesn't like, but I want to present him with so that he can learn to kind of, start to appreciate maybe different textures like olives and maybe some broccoli. And you put them in front of him, and then you don't make a big deal about it. And they eat what they eat, and they don't eat what they don't. And you just continue presenting it that way. Now, the difference is you don't let your kids eat whatever they want, because some people are like, oh, you just let your kid. No. Obviously, they're impulsive. They don't have the skills yet to make. So you present them the choices that you are okay with, and then you let them make their choices, and you make it not a big deal. And then you do your own thing. And then little by little, they start to develop that confidence in, this is.
I feel like we're, I really feel for parents that are trying to figure this out after the fact.
Yeah.
Like, this really has not been so far, right? We're coming up on 5 years. This has not been a challenge for us at all. But we went in it with intent, right? Mm-hmm. And what I think is first and foremost is what we do. What we do.
100%.
What we do and what we eat. My son is...
Kids learn what you model more than anything.
He's never craved fast food because he's never seen fast food in our house. You know what I'm saying? Like real fast food. If we eat out, it's like Nick the Greek, chicken on a stick, right? Yeah. That he called, which is one of his favorite things to have. So, you know, he consistently, and when we eat, it's not, he has his dish and then we eat together. It's the same food. It's like, and it's just not a real big deal.
And sometimes, you're not doing the whole, like, you have to eat all that. No. Yeah,
sometimes he eats a lot. Sometimes it's less. Like, you know, I was even thinking about the other day, like, I've had some nieces and nephews in my family in the past that like were really overweight kids. And I remember thinking about, like, oh, when I have a kid one day, I'm not going to let him, you know, get like that overweight. That's unhealthy. And I don't even like, I've been trying to figure out, like, what is it that probably caused their kids to put on that much behavior? That's so, because I really don't, we don't restrict Max at all. And there's times when that kid, he eats more than me sometimes. And I don't tell him he can't. I mean, he's making all whole food choices. He's eating like crazy, and I'll let him just go eat when you're, but he doesn't eat snacks. He eats food, you know, eats whole foods. And that's just kind of how we've done it, is like, hey, you're hungry? Go have a banana. Oh, you want something to eat? There's the chicken left over from yesterday. There's like, so he can have it if he's hungry, and we don't go, oh, you can only have this. And he's always maintained, and he's not like a sports kid. So he's not like super active. Like, I feel like Aurelius is really active, right? Mm-hmm. Physically runs everywhere. Does, like, I mean, Max and I wrestle and he plays, and he definitely plays. But he's also content sitting and building his Legos or reading or doing stuff like that. And weight is managed really, like, there's never been a thing where I feel like he's put on too much weight.
No, I think if you model it, is a big one. Because some kids, their houses, it's like unlimited, you know, junk food. Mm-hmm. It's like the pantry's full of it. It's what the parents eat. It's what everybody eats. And it's unlimited. There's no governing in the sense that
that's the only way I think this is happening, right? Yes. It's got to be like, you're not governing it. You're allowing them to eat whenever, and then
eating what you eat.
Yeah,
you
Doritos, candy, treats,
yes.
And those calories do sneak up really fast. And they're so desirable for a kid.
They have drug-like effects.
Exactly. He's probably going to eat.
The brain is modeling so much as a kid that if you grow up eating like that when you're a kid, there's a certain percentage of that you'll never get back, in the sense that their brain is going to start to mold itself off of these incredibly palatable foods to where they might never be able to enjoy whole natural foods the way they could have, mm-hmm. because they experience these drug-like effects from all these, you know, processed foods.
It's really crazy. I've had a little bit of a, I guess we celebrated recently because we've had a bit of difficulty with our youngest kid when it comes to, like, just not, I mean, I guess just to trying healthy foods and like trying to consistently like seek it out himself. And recently, like, he's been ordering fish on his own.
Wow.
I'm like, what the, like Brussels sprouts. Like, he's like ordering all the stuff if we go out to eat, like, on his own. And so I guess my thing right now is just to put a little encouragement out there to parents that, you know, it's not always like, you might model it. You might have like the whole foods on display. You might be doing all the right steps, but your kid is still very resistant.
It's a long game.
It's a long game.
Yes, because this is what you're weighing. My kid eats perfect now versus I help them develop the skills to be able to make good choices for the rest of their life.
And really,
it's a longer process.
Really, it was the intensity that was for us around it that was backfiring. So,
totally.
You know, for me to step back and just be like, you know, he's going to have some things, like, we're not going to provide it. You know, I know he's going to go to his friends, or he's going to go,
sure.
And he's going to get some things, like, you know, outside of our control. But I mean, he was never like that far off. It was just like, it just eat at me, you know, mm-hmm. It's just like, like, why can't you eat more protein? Why can't we like start, you know, in this sequence, and then, like, you know, let's, and he would always fight and try and like make his own food while as a dinner, we're like having food. I'm like, no, you have, like, we're eating this as a family, and, you know, and there's all this intensity around it. And so just kind of like pulled myself out of that, and it's slowly been working. So I wanted to throw that out there, because it's a lot of this, like, yes, you can control your modeling and you can control the consistency, but that's about it.
So talk a little bit more, Justin, about that, like, how you balance out, because I also don't think you give in to just like, imagine if you guys are having chicken or steak dinner and say rice, vegetables, whatever, whatever a staple dinner might look like at your house. Mm-hmm. And it might be something he doesn't like. I mean, does he get to go have pizza instead and have whatever he wants? Like, no. how do you manage? Like, I don't like that. I don't feel like that. But at the same time too, the default can't be Doritos and stuff.
Yeah. No.
Like,
yeah, I guess. Yeah. That's a good point. I don't have that as like the fallback. It's more like, I like the steak, but I don't like the broccoli, and I don't the rice, and I don't
of the like choices that are there.
The potatoes, yeah. Like he didn't like anything else other than like one item.
Oh, okay.
You know, and then I'm like, well, that's all you're eating.
Yeah,
and that's it.
Yeah,
you know, and you relax. Fight always.
You know? Yeah.
And you're chill about it.
I think so. We've been like that with Max too, and what I've noticed even in his short 4.5 years. Is he goes through these phases of liking some things and not.
Bro, they're learning. Totally. Yeah, you know, Jessica makes a really good point with little kids. She's like, think about it when you're a little kid. Little kids or kids in general have no control or autonomy. They're constantly being told what to do. So when they feel like they need control, they'll assert it in places. And if you push, they'll push harder. So like mm-hmm. you said, you throw the intensity on.
Yeah.
Your kid fights back in your. It's because they're told when to wake up, what to wear, where to go.
Yeah,
you know, so you give them a little bit of autonomy,
freedom.
It's funny too how you can easily influence them negatively without the intent of it. For example, this just happened. 100%. So it's funny we're having this conversation because again, I think Max has been just incredible with food. It has been very easy for us. But there's times when again he doesn't like something. And we made egg salad because of the talk about eggs recently. I've been trying to incorporate more eggs. So I'm like, you know, let's do some hard-boiled eggs. Yeah. Let's try to incorporate more eggs into our – because that's an area he doesn't do a lot of eggs for breakfast. That's not a go-to thing. So
is this after we talked about that study?
Yeah. So like again, right away I'm trying to introduce that. So Katrina made egg salad sandwiches. He's never had that shit. I think I've only had that twice with her since we've been here. It's just not a staple thing that we would make is an egg salad sandwich. So we're having it first time, and I'm like really like excited to see how he's going to react. But because I'm over here, I'm like, this is so good.
Too much,
yeah, dude. So like,
that's what I do.
Into it, and he's like, just like spits
overhyped.
It. Yeah, like he never does that. And I'm like, and Katrina looked at me. She goes, that was your fault. You know that, right?
100%, dude.
And I'm like, what? And she's just like, yes. She's like, that's your son because you made it about you. Like you wanted him to like it. If you would have just ignored him, he would have ate it. And he wouldn't even said anything.
That's me, dude. Yeah, I'm so bad at that.
Totally fucked up, dude. And I know I did because I was like, I wanted him to be excited about it because I was in my back.
I've totally done that.
Yeah. Normally, I just ignore. I don't even pay attention to what she's feeding.
If you act chill and you do your thing.
That's what Katrina's like. She's like, that was all on you. She's like, you made a big deal about how good it tastes. And because of that, he was.
I did this last night. So right before, so our three-year-old, he's potty trained, but at night he'll wear a diaper in case of accidents or whatever. But right before he goes to bed, I want him on the toilet. Otherwise, what happens is I put him down, I stay with him in bed, and then he's like, oh, change my diaper. I'm like, oh, I gotta, you know, we got to stop this process. So I want him to sit on the toilet. So last night, you know, I take him to the bathroom and, you know, I try to goad him and excite him. And then I put him on. He kind of, you know, yells a little bit. And I was like, no, you got to go to the bathroom. And Jessica's like, you don't got to do that. I'm like, what do you mean? If he doesn't do that, then I got to change his diaper. I'm gonna deal with that. She's like, just, this is all you got to do. And she basically, this is what she does. She just talks with him, hangs out. She slowly walks in the bathroom, does some stuff in the mirror or whatever. What does he do? He follows her. Follows her in the bathroom, starts talking, and they start having a good conversation.
Yeah.
While she's talking with him, he picks up a dental floss like she has. He's doing it. And then she like pulls his pants down, sits on the toilet, and they're still talking. Like nothing.
Yeah.
Just relax the whole just time.
Ninja style.
Yeah. Meanwhile, I'm like, do it, you know? Yeah, I know. I want to be the authority, which is just that's cracks me up.
So funny.
Adam, I want to ask you, because you might not know, you might know this. What is the most durable car brand in the world? Now the criteria is how long these cars actually stay on the road after they've been released or whatever.
Toyota or Honda?
Rolls Royce.
Oh,
Rolls Royce. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yep. So Rolls Royce is, and I'll read you the stats. It's the most durable car ever made. Almost 3/4 of the cars that have ever been produced in the company's history are still in active use today.
Wow, that speaks to the quality.
Wow,
I had no idea.
Okay, so
now I wonder if there might be a little
caveat to that because when
people
you
take care of them,
yes, like yeah, you have a $400,000 plus car, you tend to sit in the garage, well maintain it, pamper it. It only comes out on Fridays for dinner. And so it's really common to buy a 10-year-old, you know, Bentley or Rolls Royce, and it's still a nice car. So I wonder if that plays a role.
I would definitely say it's got to be the most durable luxury car then. Because every expensive car.
For sure. And there's actually lots of like Maserati is an example of like a luxury car that's got a bad reputation for like, oh, yeah, you'll have to fix something.
Do they really?
Yeah, Maseratis. I like the way a Maserati looks, but that's one of the turnoffs is when you look at the reviews
on it.
Yeah, and they don't have enough horsepower.
But don't they have a Ford engine?
I don't know who. Does Ford own Maserati?
I think so.
Really?
Yeah, that ruined it for me.
I didn't know that.
Maybe
that
double check that. Maybe someone double check that.
I think Chrysler owned them for a while.
Really? I don't know.
Look up and see who. I didn't know that's who.
That makes me not like
them. I mean, they've got a gorgeous car. When we were out with shopping for Doug's, I remember looking at this one they had there that was beautiful. But when I got online and I looked at like all the reviews, it's just a, what is it, Doug?
Owned by Stellantis, which was itself created in a merger between Fiat Chrysler Automobiles and Peugeot.
Okay.
In 2021.
Oh, I didn't know there was a merger.
Okay, so it's more complex than I thought.
Yeah, yeah. But you know, it's a really, really expensive. And are Rolls Royce, this is something I don't know either. Are Rolls Royce handmade still? Is it like Ferrari and stuff like that where it's not a factory?
Every Ferrari is handmade, right?
Yeah.
Italian dudes in there.
They're just like really hardy and like.
Yeah, tanks, they're made to order.
Yeah.
Handmade.
So, I mean, that's just, again, that's, so yeah. So it's, you're going to talk about like a, so the quality of it.
Because handmade now means expensive, whereas before it meant like that's everything. I wonder if like, because of AI and stuff, that's going to be like.
Human made.
Yeah. Like, hey, dude, this sandwich was made by a human.
I do think that. I do think like, this is like why I think we'll see this kind of. We're in the middle of this weird time of like even like what we talked about before, like, shoes now, like knockoff shoes are super popular. My buddies, we're in this thread. These are my childhood best friends. And one of the things that's going right now in conversation is these knockoff pro jerseys for like, if you want like a basketball or NFL authentic jersey, you're paying like $170-$240 for an authentic jersey. You know, these knockoffs for like $20.
Where do you get them?
And they're ordered from China or whatever. Yeah, like they
can you tell?
No, that's what my buddies are just like. You could not tell. Like it's the detail. So my point is that we're in the middle of this time where the really really expensive stuff is getting outcompeted by knockoffs that are like ridiculously cheaper. What I do think will happen over time is there'll be this resurgence of, I mean, look at art. Some art is done like so sick, right? Like you see this AI art that's being created and you're like, that is badass. So I think we're in the middle of like adopting a lot of that stuff. And then I think we're going to come back to like exactly what you said. It'll be like, well, who made this?
Mm-hmm.
Did a person like creatively make this?
What's the story behind it?
Yes. Yeah. Who is it? Who's your favorite guy? You always talk about the musician that, Rick Rubin.
Yeah, Rick Rubin.
He talks about how, you know, like real artistry is the artist not creating something to go viral, not creating something to appease the
completely their own interest.
Yes, it's this selfish diary that they're sharing with the world, and you like it or you don't like it.
Well, the story is so important, which is why some music and art is more valuable after the artist dies. Half the time.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and then you hear about the story and the value goes up.
Yeah.
Because the story is really what people
see. So you're watching that show I'm watching right now, Doug. There's a part in there where they talk about a Patek Philippe watch that was worn by, I think, Eisenhower when he signed some crazy bill and like the value of that. And it's like, it's just a watch. Because of the moment it's tied to.
Wow.
So yeah, I think we're going to see things like, I don't know, what's cool about AI. And the ability for us to copycat and these like fake shoes, fake things like that, is it opens up the market for anybody and everybody that wants to have or experience what it's like to have that. But I do think that there will still be this, high end market for
it's. I mean, it's already man-made. 100. I agree with you 100%. We already have evidence of that. Like, used to be, if you were poor, you had horses, and if you were rich, you had cars. Now. If you're rich, you have horses. people who own horses take care of them actually have money.
It's so true. You know, speaking of that and talking about technology, did you see they came out? I just saw, I think it was Sean Baker shared the report on the, they just had a new study on the electric cars.
Oh, that they produce more, that they're worse for the environment than.
Yeah. Have you, how much, okay, so.
I haven't dived enough.
Okay, I want you to dive into it. You're better at reading studies and stuff than I am. And because it's so hard to tell, like, what it's a bunch of propaganda war on both sides.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to sift through that and go like, okay, how much of this is like truth and how much of it is propaganda? So
it's interesting to think about too, because one thing I know I was listening, I think it was a former CIA or FBI agent that was on like Joe Rogan. He was talking about, you know, like lithium and cobalt.
Oh,
like,
and how it's mined.
The mines and who owns the majority of those around the world? And it's China. And China completely like monopolizing all of these mines to the point where if we're shifting in this direction, it goes right into their favor economically.
Wow.
And we're basically handing over like an entire industry to make them a powerhouse even more. So it was just an interesting thought.
Isn't that the same 80%, too?
So the propaganda wise, I'm sure that plays into
it. Yeah. 80% of the cobalt output there is owned by China.
Well, then you add in too what they're doing power wise, right? Too, like they're the only ones that are pushing the nuclear right now, right?
I mean, if somebody says that they care about the environment and they don't support, they don't understand.
Yeah, but back to Justin's point, I mean, it's so much better economically that it's like a race right now, and if we don't, we're going to get destroyed, right? Isn't that what's happening? Like if they get to a point where they have enough of these nuclear reactors that are producing energy, they'll supply energy for the entire world and we'll have to buy from them because buying from them will still be cheaper than us producing ourselves.
Okay, so Doug, if you could look up like what actually powers power stations. You know what I'm saying? When you go to charge up, I believe it's still like energy plants.
Still coal.
We're still burning fuel to produce electric charge for people to charge their cars with. Yeah. So what are we doing?
Yeah, I don't know. Speaking of energy, okay, so I'm excited that we are going to mention Legion today because usually when we work with a company that sends us a new supplement, either A, we're not that excited about the new supplement, or B, one or two of us is excited about the supplement, but rarely is it where they send us a bunch of bottles and we all take them. And
are you talking about Lunar?
Yeah.
Bro,
that has to be one of the most effective supplements for sleep ever.
I definitely have received some of the benefit. I went from like 4 down to 2, and then I swear you could find like your sweet spot.
Doug says he does one tablet.
Yeah.
Is that all you're taking?
Like I just do
just
two.
One, yeah.
So maybe I should back off the 4 because I take 4 and it's like a coma.
Yeah,
but
do you wake up too much for
me? No. I should explain that too. It's like I fall in a sleep like I'm in a coma. And for me, I say that because you guys all know I get up to pee 2 or 3 times. It's been now like if I take that, I might one time get up, which is wild.
So here's what's weird. Doug, maybe pull up the supplement. I looked at the ingredients. And they're all legit ingredients that will help with relaxation and sleep, okay? But when I first looked at the ingredients, there wasn't, and this is like, of course, shame on me, right? There was no like, whoa, new discovered herb or whatever. I'm like, yeah, I'm familiar with these, you know, we'll see what happens. And then you take it and it works so effectively, improves the quality of your sleep. I know you guys are measuring your quality through your rings or whatever. What this shows me is how much other supplement companies lie. Because they'll say they have certain ingredients or certain amounts, but they don't work the same.
Yeah, you don't feel the effects.
We know Mike, and Mike is he's a super stickler when it comes to, if it says it's got 500 milligrams, it has 500 milligrams. If it says it has this, it has that. Mm-hmm. Doug, I can't see because the screen is messed up.
Yeah, it's
up
hard
there.
To see because it's small. Oh, there you but go. It's glycine, theanine, GABA, melatonin.
I mean, nothing that you would hear that's spectacular.
Do you think maybe those salads, because I don't know if I've ever taken a supplement with that blend of those things. And I know how theanine makes me. I like the way theanine makes me feel. I've thoroughly enjoyed
it. Glycine's a good one. Glycine also improves.
I don't know if I've ever taken that by itself or anything like that. And I know we've had GABA. Stuff with GABA in it before.
It's an inhibitory neurotransmitter, so it kind of like chills out the brain.
And then the melatonin dose is really low. So it's
500 micrograms.
Yeah.
Everybody takes way too much melatonin and disrupt their own melatonin production. And you know this because you'll wake up in the middle of the night when it wears off.
Would that be considered a microdose of melatonin?
Or appropriate dose, but compared to most melatonin supplements will have 3 grams, 5 grams.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is half of a gram, right? 500, no, sorry, milligrams. Sorry, this is half of a milligram. most companies are 3 milligrams or 5 milligrams.
3 to 5. That's kind of
not grams, milligrams. Sorry.
Yeah. 3 to 5 milligrams is the typical dose that you would get in like your regular over the counter. So yeah, no, it's been interesting. So there's no concern because it's a microdose of the melatonin that
it'll interrupt your melatonin production.
Yeah.
Far less of a concern at that dose.
So I did it for a while because it was so effective. But now what I'm trying to do is like intermittently use it, right? Like I think I went almost, 2 weeks without missing a day because I was just like, no way. Let's see if it works again. So it's like, okay, 14 days in a row, this stuff works for sure.
And so, it's a chewable tablet, which I thought.
That's why I
like. So I thought, why make it a tablet? Who cares? Swallow pills. That way you don't drink water right before you go to bed.
That's why I love it. Because I swear by Mellow, right? So Mellow's been, and which is the magnesium is what I've needed, right? So that's been the product that I always talk about for sleep. The one drawback is when I forget to do it like an hour or two before bed and I do it and I'm drinking. Then I'm drinking that thing of water to get it down. Yeah. And then that's just adding to my problem of having to pee all the time. So I do love that this is a chewable tablet. In fact, if our partners over at Net are listening to this, if you can make Mellow into a chewable, that would be.
I think a chewable tablet for a sleep aid, it makes perfect sense, period, because of the water aspect.
Yeah, well, because, I mean, I guess if you're not like me, because I don't drink a lot of water, but any water. I have to go pee. And it's this weirdest thing. It's so funny because I was talking to my cousin about this. And I've actually never heard anybody else communicate it. And it's like he describes it exactly the same way that I feel. It's like it's so annoying that it's not like I get up and I'm like, oh, I'm having to pee so much because I drank so much water. It's like just the feeling you have to pee a little bit
keeps you awake.
Keeps me awake. Yeah. And I have to go to the bathroom and get out even the little bit that it is, which is so annoying. It's not even like
and it's always been like that since you were a kid.
Yeah.
I know your uncle talks about
it. My cousin, my uncle, all
weird.
Yeah, all.
You guys should get like actually have your bladder scanned. I wonder if you actually do have a small bladder.
I know
you say that.
I don't know, but it's so it's so annoying that happens. And so yes, the chewable Lunar Legion, like Mike, hit it out the park.
Speaking of supplements, so one of the most popular supplements that we've talked about from Organifi are their Shilajit chewables, right? And so, they're selling them out like crazy. So I pulled up, this is medical news today. So just for people who are like, oh, you know, Shilajit, what is it? Whatever. This is a medical news today article and it's listing benefits from Shilajit that are studied, that are shown in studies. So it's good for Alzheimer's. So it's good for cognitive performance. It seems to slow down the aging process when they measure it molecularly. Don't know what that means necessarily, but it's positive. Helps with anemia, antiviral, chronic fatigue. So people with chronic fatigue syndrome seem to do better. Hmm. Altitude sickness, liver cancer, heart health, obesity, and then this one, male fertility, and testosterone, which that's a big impact. Yeah.
Wide range of benefits.
It's a weird compound. It is literally like the plant matter that's been, you know, underground for thousands and thousands and thousands
dense
of years.
Dense nutrients.
And it comes out like black ooze.
Is it a fungus?
No, it's biomass. It's broken down.
It's like topsoil kind of, right?
It looks like, if you look up a picture, it looks like tar. It looks black and whatever. It's high in fulvic acid and other nutrients. I think there's something else we haven't identified because it's been used as a supplement for a long time.
I know
it's Ayurvedic medicine.
How does that happen?
Like mountain goat piss or something in there?
Bro, people were desperate. People were desperate back in the day. Like there was always that one guy that's like, I'll try that. Let's see what happens.
Yeah, hey, let's give it a whirl.
Did Fred die? He didn't know. Not only did he not die, but he's driving.
What's interesting to me too is though, like, it's not, I mean, and this is all supplements. It's not like you see it or you take it. It's like this profound, like instant thing. It's like, you would have to try this for a while and see if I notice these effects from it. It's like, that's weird to me.
It's like I put in the category of, cause there's herbs that do certain things, whatever. I think it's more like a multivitamin in the sense that the reason why it benefits all those things is I think that there's some potential deficiencies that it may be filling
I think the same. It's really like, I think, especially on the mineral side of things, I think that we just don't get that, because like a lot of the plants don't even have, can't pull from that anymore because of the way that we farm.
Yep. Anyway,
that makes the most sense.
Since we're talking about studies, I read the most interesting, I think obvious study when you think about it, but they pulled a bunch of college aged and middle aged men. And it was a bunch of questions to see how their personality is, how they viewed women, relationships. And then at the end, it was essentially like, would you have sex with a sex robot?
Oh.
Here's the connection that they found, which now makes a lot of, when I say it, it'll make a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you guys this. What kind of guys are most likely to want to have sex or that would have sex with a sex robot?
Well, what
kind of guys?
What do you mean by what kind Sims. Of guys?
Well, like what kind of, well, like, are we just, I mean, you're kind of getting there. Like what kind of personality, what kind of, you know,
I attitude? Mean, somebody who's insecure and isolated and like
on the computer and doesn't really like social interaction.
Yeah.
The connection they made were the men that had the most negative views towards women were the most likely to want to have sex with the sex robot.
Oh, that makes sense too, right? Yeah. Oh my God.
Sad.
Creepy.
Isn't that sad?
Yeah, I'm trying, you know,
would I what?
Have sex with a robot?
No.
You wouldn't even try it just to see?
No. I mean, if you're talking to 14-year-old me, I mean, you could ask me if I had sex with a couch. And I probably would say yes.
That's what I'm saying.
But like 45-year-old me? No, I wouldn't do. No, I'm not going to
say. I mean, how many days would it take?
Yeah, I don't. I don't think
let's draw this out.
Yeah, dude, let's see how long.
I don't know how long I could last.
I don't think. Even if they get to the point where they make them like so real human, like I don't think I would.
That would make me less likely, by the way, because I'd be creeped out. You know, if it looked like a human, and it would freak me out. When you have sex with it, oh man.
Yeah. No, I don't think I could. Because I've had friends right that can do the. You know, I'm looking for a politically correct word. I'm going to get fucking roasted. Blow up doll. Oh, great. I mean, what's the politically correct word for a whorehouse? What is
it? Prostitution.
A brothel.
A brothel. Thank you, Doug. I knew there.
Sex worker.
Whatever. You know what I mean, right?
Whorehouse.
So.
I still said the word, Adam. Just because you asked for the politically correct term doesn't mean you didn't say the word.
Well, no, I was trying to find it. I couldn't find it. So you're just getting the real one. So
I don't think there is a real term. Yeah.
I mean, I have friends that I've been with, I've been to places like this before, and they have no problem. I never could. Like, even like being young guy, single.
Because you know that they don't actually like you.
Yeah. I couldn't even get aroused in a situation in a moment like that. So I definitely don't think that the most amazing robot could ever make that work for me, which I've always tried to
be like indistinguishable, right?
What made me like evaluate that is like, what is it about me that's different than my friends that could do that? Like what's different about them than me that why that's,
I mean, they, that's pure
the connection.
Yeah. And that's pure objectification, right? They're objectifying the people like to the
they
point
can dissociate.
Where,
yeah. And they can just like, you know, release, if you will. Dude.
Yeah, I mean, there was like real enjoyment though from it. It's not, I don't feel like they were going there, like, because that makes me feel like you would go and it's just like, you know, you're going. It's like it's something I need to do. I just need to go here and do this. Where it's like they were excited, like getting to go there and the trip.
Because I don't know. Yeah,
yeah. I'm just like, I'm not feeling this moment at all.
You know that they don't really want to be there. You're paying them. You know that they've just been with whoever. You know?
Yeah. And that's it, and because of all that. It doesn't turn me on, and I don't care how beautiful the woman is or not. It's not attractive for me, or doesn't get me aroused. So I can't imagine
you got to be kind of like a pirate,
an artificial robot. What? That's, I definitely know.
Those were the ones, you know, back in the day in history, right?
It's because they're on a ship.
Yeah,
forever.
Yeah.
Sea manatee. Hmm.
Yeah, exactly. They get real horny out there at sea for a while.
What's going on?
Well, there's got to be something right about your character that allows you to be able to disconnect and do that. Like,
it's total objectification, man. It's I don't know, it's wild. But the robot thing is interesting, because at some point, like, men and women are going to be presented with this option, and I imagine it's going to be, there's going to be this conversation what's going to be like, I like my robot better than a man, because a man is this and he doesn't listen to me and he doesn't whatever, and this one just, you know, or I like my robot girl because she serves me. She does whatever I want. She's never mad at me or whatever. So they're much better. This is going to be a weird conversation potentially or situation.
I mean, I believe it'll happen though.
I think that'll be the next quote unquote human rights argument. That's what I think. I think they're going to start like, oh, well, this robot has a right to marry.
I've seen that Black Mirror episode.
Yeah.
It's going to get weird.
I got the shout out today. In fact, I'll save this shout out, Doug, for the next one so you don't forget, because you already have it written out. Shout out, and I'll give you the shout out on the show that I referenced, because we haven't referenced like a good show. Recently found Gentleman on Netflix. It is a Guy Ritchie film. So if you liked his style, so good. I don't think I've got into a good Netflix. Netflix is not my favorite streaming service of all the streaming services, as far as the quality, right? I've referenced them as the junk food of streaming service, right? But I definitely think that this was well done. So if you guys haven't checked that out, I know Doug started it. You guys haven't started watching it yet, have
not
you?
Yet,
yeah. Check out Gentleman on Netflix.
Hey, in today's episode, you heard us talking about tirzepatide and semaglutide. These are the GLP-1 agonists that you've probably read about in the news, otherwise known brand names, Wegovy, Ozempic, super effective peptides for weight loss. It's groundbreaking stuff. Anyway, we work with doctors. They work with GLP-1 agonists. They also work with other peptides, and they work with hormone therapy. If you'd like a referral, if you'd like a prescription, or to learn more, go to mphormones.com. All right, back to the show.
First question is from Bree Strong. What is the best exercise to get rid of mom pooch?
Okay. Well, first let's define that. So this, I'm assuming, is not just extra body fat in the midsection, because you know that would be getting leaner, right? When people say mom pooch, and I've had a lot of clients who have referred to this. In fact, I remember one woman in particular. She had three kids. Hired me. We trained. We worked out together. And she got really fit. She got really fit and lean. And she said, you know, it's really weird, Sal. She goes, my lower midsection kind of pooches out, and it was never like that before. Before I had kids, when I was an athlete, similar leanness, I didn't have that kind of pooch. This is back in the day when I was kind of just getting started. And so I looked at the muscles involved with pulling in the midsection, and it really became clear to me. So when you have a child, there are muscles that surround the core. The transverse abdominis is the main one that hold everything in second. So when you suck in your stomach, that's the muscle you're contracting. Mm-hmm. Well, when you have a child, that muscle has to stretch and atrophy in order to make room. After you have the baby, if you don't specifically target and strengthen that muscle, it remains, or it will remain, somewhat atrophied. So you can work your abs, your obliques, but not really develop the TVA back to where it was before. And because gravity pushes organs down, it doesn't hold things in like it used to, you'll get this pooch. So the exercises you want to do are ones that strengthen and work the TVA.
Yeah. I mean, I have two thoughts. One is that I think that is absolutely true, because I actually seen this even on my own physique. Obviously, I didn't carry a kid and have that.
But it was just a burrito.
Your little Joey pouch.
This was something that I remember getting ready for my first show. It was before I even decided to get on stage. It was when I was like kind of prepping to see what it would look like to do my first like real hard cut. And I got down to sub 7% body fat. And even that lean, I'm like, you're pretty shredded at 7% body fat. I still had this like pooch.
Like extra body fat.
Yeah, extra body fat that was just stubborn. And what I realized was I had to go back to a reverse diet, bulk up, add some calories in the diet again, but staying lean. Obviously, I put on a little bit of body fat, but like stayed under 10%, but put on muscle, bulked up, and then came back down again, cut really hard, got sub 7% again. Then a little bit of it went away. And I did that about two or three times before I felt like it went away
completely. You're referring to the stubborn body fat. White fat is that stubborn body fat, whereas brown is more thermogenic and active. And brown fat will burn faster than white fat. And there's things you could do to convert white to brown. I don't know how much of an effect it has, but things like submerging yourself in cold water, strength training, and then I think getting yourself down to a certain point. I think then once you get rid of it, it doesn't come back in the same way.
Yeah, it eventually does. Like because I carry more body fat now, it's there again. But once I did that, and as long as I kept my calories in check and I was strength training consistently, then it maintained staying lean there. But I did notice that. So I think the combination of both working on TVA core exercises, the drawn maneuver, the vacuum pose, Those are great exercises to strengthen the muscle, to pull it back in. And then also understanding that if there is some body fat still there and it's not just atrophied muscle, that, and it's just stubborn body fat, you know, as you continue to get leaner, reverse diet, get leaner again, reverse diet, leaner again, it eventually will go to.
By the way, like again, drawing back to that story, I remember when I learned about the TVA then, and I said, oh, okay, we can get on hands and knees, and I want you to draw your belly button in towards your spine, like you're trying to suck in your stomach, do it as hard as you can. So I did this exercise with her. Now, keep in mind, at this point, she was fit. We'd done core exercises, you know, abs are good, obliques are good.
She couldn't even connect.
She had trouble connecting to drawing in. She would draw in just a little bit. I'm like, you can't draw in anymore. She goes, no. And I'm like, light bulb, like, okay, this is the issue. And then through practice, she was able to draw in more and more. And then it did. It shrunk her waist. I think it came down like a quarter or half an inch just from strengthening that muscle.
Next question is from Aaron MLLT. I'm experiencing pain under my left clavicle after tricep dips. What am I doing wrong?
This is sounds like acromioclavicular joint pain, right? AC joint.
Yeah.
Is typically what's happening. Shoulder mobility, stability, and shortening the range of motion and slowly working on a larger range of motion, but going with lesser resistance. If you have AC joint pain and you push it too hard with this exercise, it's not going to be good.
It's going to backfire. Yeah. And I've had a lot of clients that have shoulder mobility limitations that try to dip and they really feel the pain and restriction there. So it's definitely something like maybe that should be like an entire focus is really to like open up, you know, range of motion and strength there with a lot of mobility drills before really like diving too much into dips.
Do you think because there's a discrepancy from left to right for this person that they would obviously see this in like our zone one test? Like,
I
mean,
good idea.
So this, I mean, again, this is stressing why like everybody that listens to this podcast, if you go through any of our major programs, Prime is a program that you all should, it highlights if you were to hire me as a trainer, the first thing that I would do is Prime. I would do a full assessment on you to look for these types of things. If I was to do a zone one, zone two, or zone three test, and I see a major discrepancy from your left to your right on your shoulder. And what I mean by that is like, so this person, I'm guessing, if they were to do our Prime Pro Zone.
You would see the left, the right.
You would see when they go to get themselves in that zone one test, that one side's probably going to be off the wall significantly more than the other side. And then it's very obvious when we go in to do an exercise like a dip that the reason why you're feeling that is due to your shoulder mobility stuff. It's gonna show up on that left side in that test.
Yep.
And then it will work. It'll find its way into issues, into different movements.
You know, the way that I, when I was younger, got myself to be able to do really deep dips early on was I used a weight-assisted dip machine and put enough assistance to where I could do a deep dip without pain or without too much struggle. And I practiced in there and slowly added less assistance. And it got me to be able to do a full dip.
The other way to do it, like, and this is actually still to this day how I can go cold into really deep dips. I'll walk over to the dip bar and actually standing up, right, without my feet elevated, and put myself
stretch there
in that position, and then hold an isometric position right there. Yeah. So I get really
connect.
I can connect to the really, really deep position, and then I come out of that. Versus what most people do is they jump up,
start at the top,
and they come down into the position. I actually get myself into the deepest position I want to go. I get and connected in the isometric position. That's kind of how I warm up, and then I go into the exercise from there. Mm. That really, really will help. But nonetheless, back to my original point to the audience, that if you're running any of our programs, you should also have Prime. It should complement anything that you're doing and should go through that so that when you run into these issues, you have a reference to go back and be like,
got to address it. You can't ignore it.
Yeah. And then, and in there, like if you fail on the zone one, there's shoulder mobility movements that will improve that. And what's awesome is if that's the reason, which is probably what it is, you go do those exercises that we have in there, those priming movements, before you go do dip, and you should first time feel a difference. It may not eliminate it completely, but it should already start to move in the positive direction of how you feel from that. And that's your right away your sign is like that's the problem, that's the root cause. I need to address this.
Next question is from Meg's Daily Wellness. You mentioned in a previous episode that volume should be higher when bulking. So what rep range is best to train in during a bulk? Is one more beneficial than the other, increasing weight versus increasing reps?
I think you need to clarify should. I don't think you said should. I think the comment
can.
Was you can.
Yes, yeah. Yes. When you're bulking and you have a lot of calories, that's when you can add more volume to your training.
The point of
with a lower risk of overtraining.
Yes, your point of that, to make this clear to the audience, was not that you should increase volume for sure just because you're in a bulk. It's that if you were going to increase volume, you're more likely to be able to handle it. But you very well could be not in a bulk, already overtraining your volume, and then you go into a bulk just because you're having a few hundred more calories, you go too much volume. So you could still do too much volume.
100%.
Yeah, especially volume's your go-to for the way you train all the time.
Yes.
So to interrupt that and do something, you know, with less reps and, you know, like crank the intensity a bit, you know, might be like the perfect shift.
Right. Now, as far as rep ranges are concerned, like the best the rep range is going to give you the best results in that, especially in that initial 5 to 6 week period, is a new rep range. Regardless if you want to bulk, if you want to cut, maintain, whatever, it's that new rep range. Now, that all being said, okay, if all of that is equal and you're starting out, let's say you're starting out. Let's just say all rep ranges would pose that same initial, novelty signal to your body. Then I think higher reps are probably better in a bulk and lower reps are probably better in a cut, mainly because of the volume issue, which we talked about earlier. But I do want to be clear. It's not like this massive effect. It's not like you go from now, unless you're like, you're super low and deficient in calories. But the difference between a good appropriate cut and a bulk in terms of volume is not like you add 50% more volume to your training.
Well, I have a different way to communicate this question, right? So the back half of this question is one more beneficial than the other, increasing weight versus increasing reps?
Oh, yeah.
I would push you in the direction of whichever one of those two is more novel for you, meaning that there tends to be two types. There tends to be a division between the type of person that you are. You're normally one or the other. And I'll use Justin and I as an example of this. If Justin and I are going after our workouts, this is just typically, doesn't mean that all the time, but typically I'm the guy that would lean towards more volume, more reps. He would be the guy to go add more weight to the bar. So if you're asking yourself, what should you do in this situation? Doing the opposite is going to yield probably the most return for you. So because Justin knows that he's the guy that likes to push weight and push strength more than he likes to add a bunch more of reps and exercises to his routine. And he's like, man, I'm trying to get change. I'm trying to see change in my body. This is maybe a time I should probably go the volume. Same, and the opposite is true for me. I'm typically the guy that's like, oh, I'll just do a superset, or I'll add an extra set or some more reps, where it's like, you know what? Let's challenge myself weight-wise. Let's add more weight to the bar. So ask yourself, which one are you more likely to probably do, and then go the opposite direction, because the novel stimulus in the bulk will probably yield more gains for you.
Next question is from Ben Melton Coach. How important is it to correct things like posture, muscle imbalances, and core strength before adding strength training, or can they be done alongside each other?
I'm going to change the question because it's posing the question either in a way that is actually presenting inaccurate information. Here's what the question should say. How important is it to correct things like posture, muscle imbalances, and core strength before trying to add more weight to the bar or just keep getting stronger? Okay, because correcting posture, muscle imbalances, and core strength is strength training. It's all strength training. So if I'm trying to work on your posture, if I'm trying to work on a muscle imbalance, I use strength training to do that. Now, how important is it that you correct those things before you just add weight to the bar? Imperative. It's imperative because if you add load to your body without correcting those things, you will strengthen those imbalances.
Yep.
If you have this imbalance between your right shoulder and your left shoulder where your right shoulder hikes up every time you do a row, and you just don't like, forget it, I'm not going to correct that, I'm just going to add weight to the bar, you're going to make that problem stronger.
Yeah.
It's going to be harder to correct, and you're going to present yourself with potentially worse problems. So like trainers know this, good trainers know this. You don't add weight to the bar if there's an imbalance. You fix that first. That's always first.
Yeah, there's nothing to add to that. I mean, that's literally, like, that's exactly how you address. Maybe the add to that is like, what are some of the ways you do that? Like switching over to unilateral movements, doing corrective work, right? Because again, to your point, all of it's strength training.
Mm-hmm.
So just because I switch over to unilateral work, I'm still strength training. I'm just now more concerned that I want to keep the left and the right side equal.
You know what I think about? Do you remember that DEXA scan we got from that listener
Yeah.
who followed map symmetry?
Yeah.
So when you, here's the selling point, and I'm going to sell everybody on why they need to do this, because I know people listening, if I was a kid, I'd be like, whatever, I don't care. I just want to gain muscle. All right. This young woman was already well-trained. So she was a young woman, already strong, already fit, built. She followed MAP symmetry. She got a DEXA scan before and after. And what she saw in the DEXA scan was, I don't remember what side it was, but her left side was a little bit smaller than her right in terms of lean body mass. And nobody's perfect. Nobody has exact 100% the same. But she had a discrepancy between her left and her right side. She followed MAP symmetry, gained 3 pounds of muscle, which for her was a big deal because she'd been working out for a while. And it all went to the areas that she needed it. Mm-hmm. Would she have built that muscle had she not focused on correcting that discrepancy? My argument would be no.
Right. Or maybe she would have, but she would just have created a greater discrepancy.
Right. Yeah. So now the point of this is it's all strength training. So yeah. It's not like you're like foregoing building muscle and changing your body because you're working on imbalances. It is part of it.
Well, I also want to make the point, because you guys kind of brought up mobility too. It's like, where the discrepancy lies, a lot of times you don't ever really focus on certain ranges of motion. And you have to treat that like you're a beginner in like certain angles. You're probably very strong and proficient up to a certain degree, but then, you know, anything further than that, mobility is strength training. You're connecting, you're recruiting muscles to be able to support and provide you with a way to be stronger in that movement. But you have to learn it all. It's almost like you're learning it from scratch if you haven't really focused on that. And so that's why, like, mobility, it looks like it's just stretching, but you're literally building up strength from a safe body weight perspective. Then we start slowly adding load, and so it's a gradual process, but you can get to the point where it's supporting your major muscles, and you're just about as strong in new ranges of motion, which builds up your entire body mass.
This is why people who are experienced, who've done this before, will tell you, like, they went lighter, got better range of motion, built more muscle.
Yep.
So you are not sacrificing progress for this. This is how you progress. Look, if you're a hard gainer, if you have a tough time building muscle, gaining weight, just can't seem to figure out how to pack on the mass, check out our free hard gainer guide. Go to mindpumpfree.com. You can also find us all on social media. Justin is on Instagram at mindpumpjustin. I'm on Instagram at mindpumpdestefano. And Adam is on Instagram at mindpumpadam.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. If your goal is to build and shape your body, dramatically improve your health and energy, and maximize your overall performance, check out our discounted RGB Super Bundle at mindpumpmedia.com. The RGB Super Bundle includes MAPS Anabolic, MAPS Performance, and MAPS Aesthetic, 9 months of phased expert exercise programming designed by Sal, Adam, and Justin to systematically transform the way your body looks, feels, and performs. With detailed workout blueprints and over 200 videos, the RGB Super Bundle is like having Sal, Adam, and Justin as your own personal trainers, but at a fraction of the price. The RGB Super Bundle has a full 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can get it now, plus other valuable free resources at mindpumpmedia.com. If you enjoy this show, please share the love by leaving us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes, and by introducing Mind Pump to your friends and family. We thank you for your support, and until next time, this is Mind Pump.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.